Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hey, guys. What's cracking?
Brian Brushwood.
Howdy, Hiddleston Highway. Hello. That's what Loki always says.
Now I know. I have a thing that I want to get into, but I wanted us to go first. Let's take some viewer listener questions.
Yeah, so this is a two-parter. I'll handle the first part, and I actually don't know what the second part says, but I got an email from David Pazzaldlo. You remember last time we did After Things that I was on, we talked about his guitar video tutorials that he was doing on YouTube, and he was a bit conflicted because he had stuff that he thought was interesting, and he had what he knew would sell and or gather a bunch of eyeballs. And we had talked a bunch and given some advice, including, hey, man, if you know what will give you a bigger platform, the bigger the platform you have, the more people you could reach with the stuff you truly care about. You know, similarly, you know, Houdini would not have reached nearly as many people with his message of skepticism if he wasn't already so popular for getting out of boxes. Anyway, I got an email 5 hours ago from David saying, hey, Brian, thank you for answering my question on After Things a few weeks back about my guitar channel. I really can't put into words how surreally awesome it was to have you guys give your honest feedback the way you did. Been a fan for years, and all of the what would the After Things guys say simulated conversations I've run through my mind were obviously nowhere near as helpful as what you guys actually said. I've actually started putting on a lot of the advice into motion and haven't ever been this pumped to keep on hustling with things. And he asks me if we can do dinner or coffee sometime. And as luck would have it, I got this about an hour before I was going to be downtown to meet with a friend. And I was like, come on out. And so he came on out. We had a delightful lunch. And he shared that that After Things, specifically the After Things podcast, is like his top three of full stop every week. And he said nice things about our candid answers and about the fact that, you know, we're not pump you up motivational speakers, but rather, you know, just people honestly trying to swim through this darkness like everyone else's.
Who cry ourselves to sleep at night, realizing what colossal failures we are, and try to just endure the night long enough to get to the day.
Along the way, we do tell the truth in a very candid way. And I suspect that is a fairly rare commodity.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's, I get so sick of hustlers and I was writing something. I was talking about how, like, people who are like, we're going to tell you how to get motivated. The people who come off so like that, I'm like, I know 3 hours later, they're on the floor crying to themselves because they feel like the biggest failure in the world.
Well, and that's the thing, is that, it is a fleeting, pumped up feeling, but a good one nonetheless.
Well, there's different kinds. I mean, just sort of the people who you on Facebook, like, I'm super pumped to share this, or I'm the killing it kind of thing. I'm like, yeah, because when you're not, you're not. But anyhow, yeah, we're happy to share.
That's a close cousin to posts about how much they love their wife every week guy.
Oh, my God.
Definitely cheating on his wife.
Living the dream. Life is perfect. Yay. Here's a picture of a portobello mushroom.
100% out of 100% times, if you're tweeting about how great your marriage is every week, your marriage is either miserable or one or both of you are cheating on each other.
So the next question he sent, I'm the least qualified person here to answer that. And I don't know, Bryce, if you have, can send that to Brian, because this the question.
Let's have Bryce read it. When we were talking, this came up over lunch and he started to ask the question. I was like, you know what? Just send us an email. We'll talk about it on the show.
Sure. We'll paraphrase it a little bit, but he wants to hear any lessons that we've got, but specifically around recording audio and video out of the home, which is something that especially Brian and Justin do, a home shared with a wife and several young and noisy children. For my YouTube channel, I typically aim to record once a week, which takes 2 to 3 hours total. I've mostly been able to stick to the schedule for about a year, but the balancing act can be tough with a family, full-time job, and other unpredictable life. Factors include weekdays being ideal for recording, but least ideal from a family point of view. Family is often the priority over the weekend. Recording late at night on weekdays is ideal for no distractions because the family is asleep, but least ideal because of being genuinely exhausted and severely paying the price the next day. Also, in general, dealing with the unpredictable scheduling that the parenting and married life can often have, time is always scarce, and while making a plan is easy, external factors don't always play along, like kids waking up and stuff. Ultimately, rolling with the punches is something I've gotten used to, but being in this for the long haul, he would love any advice on routine optimization that you guys might have. He says it's mainly aimed at Brian, but I'm sure you guys all have experience.
Yeah, one, don't get married and have kids. Problem solved.
Boom. See you next week.
I'm only half wrong now.
Okay.
You would best be able to talk about this, Brian.
I want to kind of pre-talk it with Justin because tell me if you would agree with this, Justin.
Yeah.
Not the barren, loveless Andrew. Please, go on. Go on there.
Whether you perceive it this way or not, even though you're the one who plays the songs, records the videos, does the audio mixing, edits, posts, and develops your YouTube following, you may not have realized that you have a partner. You have a partner in this business, and that is your missus, because you are on rented property using shared time, by which I mean I assume you and your wife have an agreement where you go to work, she does or does not go to work. But you know, there's no doubt that that is each of your time to do that stuff. The remaining hours, if you haven't had a discussion, by default, they are communal property, and you need to get on the same page to know how much of that is available for this project. Is that too much to say, Justin?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's the reason why, you know, a lot of the reason why that when Ashley and I were living apart from each other, the idea of us having a relationship was something like long term was something that was still something that we kind of clung to, was because either of us in other relationships had somebody that agreed with the buy-in that we both wanted to work on the internet. Like, it's a hard sell for a lot of people, especially if you go from, you know, because a lot of people don't understand it. And now more and more, it should be less and less of a shock. But a lot of people are like, no, like people F around on the internet. The internet for them is Facebook. And they don't look at the trifling entertainment there as something that's worth taking time to create. So, in general, yeah, no, I would totally agree with you that you, I think that the root of what you're getting to is that you need to have buy-in from your significant other, and A, everything becomes a lot easier, and B, now you are you're not going to suffer from some of those other consequences that he might not have written out, but I think you and I both know are real, that when you are taking time away, that oftentimes has a cost.
Right. Well, and so this is the other factor, and I think Andrew could speak to this. There was a time, and it might even be hard for us to remember, when just weird things was this weird afterthought that we just tried to wedge into schedules, and there's back and forths, and should we and shouldn't we or whatever. And I feel like the quality of the show skyrocketed once we created a holy time that all parties knew this belongs to Weird Things. And then once that happened, we all got serious about it. We all started putting episodes out on the regular, and the quality got much better.
I would certainly say that's been... What helps, that I'll give you an example. So I've launched a new project, which I've talked about before, which is Magic Club, right? Which is, you know, wanting to kind of like, I love sessioning with my friends, my magician friends and stuff. And I love learning from stuff, you know, like there's, I love that experience. You're sitting at the table and everybody's sort of showing, you take something and do a few different takes on something or whatever like that. And I thought there could be a space for something like that. I wanted to create something. I wanted to take that because I said, you know, there's really awesome stuff. Like, I mean, I refer everybody, like, if they want to learn magic, I say, like, just go to scam school. So I always tell people, like, go to scam school. And I was thinking, like, what do you want to do if you just want to have that experience of, like, hey, let's have fun with a couple other magicians who kind of know some stuff and session stuff, whatever. And that's where Magic Club started from. point being, but trying to put that together was hard. It was because I needed somebody to work with, and so I found the perfect co-host for that, Jordan Gold, who is amazing. He's amazing. Brian, you should get him out there in Austin and do like a million Scam School episodes with Jordan.
Yes, yes, yes to that.
The problem is that, you know, podcasting's new for him and scheduling's hard for me and all that. And I realize that if you're trying to say, hey, let's go do a thing with a friend, if you're like, yeah, let's do a thing, great. If you don't have a hard date and a hard time to do it, then when are you slipping on your commitment? Life got carried away and I wasn't able to do several episodes of Weird Things, and that's on me. It's not like I can blame it on, oh, the schedule, whatever. But also, if I have other people in my life I have to negotiate around, I have two things in my life that I say, well, Wednesdays I'm recording podcasts, and it was great because I could put Magic Club generally, or excuse me, Mondays podcast. Like Mondays, I can say, hey, Magic Mondays for Weird Things. I know exactly where I need to be every morning for that. And then I know every afternoon, ideally, once we get on that schedule, I can do that. But if I miss a Magic Club or Jordan ones, we know what we're missing. And then Fridays, I've got a startup aerospace thingy that I got to drive a ways to go do. So Fridays, I'm there. And so my friends and people around me kind of know now, like, oh yeah, we know Monday's out, after Friday afternoon's out, whatever. And that's that. And you, if you stick to that predictability with your schedule, then other people respect that. If it becomes flexible, then when we were wishy-washy with Weird Things, then it wasn't a problem for one of us to say, can we move it? Can we do this? Because it wasn't like we had an agreement when we're supposed to do it. It's supposed to go on Mondays. And so when I'm not there for that, I feel the guilt, you know? And I'm not going to try to schedule something on that day too. And I'm not going to try to interfere. I know Tuesday nights, Brian and Justin, I'm not trying to call them or whatever unless I forget what they're doing.
Right. Well, and keep in mind, like, it's really interesting because both Justin and I, and I'll be interested to hear if you had a similar circumstance, Justin. You know, once I, Justin and I married the internet took up all the free time. And if there was something open on the schedule and somebody wanted to shoot something, it's like, yeah, I'll do it. And for me, like, David's problem, as he put it to me, is that he will decide, okay, tonight's the night, I'm going to do the thing. And then the wife will say, his lovely bride, I mean, will say, hey, would you like to watch a movie together? And it's like, no, I'm not going to say no. I truly value this time. And as a result, work gets pushed. I can't speak for Justin, but I know I had the opposite problem. I would say yes to everything. And at some point, my wife said, I need one night. I need one night every week that you promise will belong to me, because there's stuff that I bottle up and wait to talk to you about. And if I don't get that chance to have the conversation, then it's just gonna be a problem for us. So, you know, I carved out family time out of what in general is playing around on the internet time. If you do the reverse, if you could get her on board, you should make a contract with yourself. And this is universal advice for anybody who has a YouTube channel. Regular postings. I don't care if it's weekly. I don't care if it's every other day. I don't care if it's every fourth day. I don't care if it's once a month. Regular postings. That is writ in stone, embedded in your skull and downloaded to your neural wetware. And beyond that, you do what it takes to make sure to make that happen, including banking a bunch of episodes in advance, negotiating with your wife. You're like, you know what? I'll watch a movie tonight, but I've made a commitment. See that? It's written up there on that board right there. It says every Thursday, I think I can make that work if you can carve out 5 hours tomorrow during the day for me to make up this or whatever. Like once you make the rest of your family partners in the arrangement, it is astonishing how much more you can make happen when you have at least some bedrock set in stone.
Yeah, but don't make your family like Daddy O5 partners. Like that might be a little bit too far.
Like, what?
Have you seen that? That's this new YouTube. There's this YouTube video or channel that's getting in trouble because it's like a family of five, mom, dad, and five kids, but they like prank their kids that sometimes just kind of looks and sounds like
they're just torturing them.
Yeah. Long story short. No, I cannot say enough. If this is something that you want to take seriously, then you need to understand how so many times we in our heads can get so wrapped up in like, okay, well, I got to get motivated for this. I got to do this. Like it's very, very selfish. And it is a problem that you gotta conquer to make sure that things happen. But at the same time, you do gotta watch out for everything else that is in your life. And your wife, at the very least, needs to be a silent partner in your operation, if not a very, very active person who's going to look out for and protect the time it takes to continue to create regular content. Like, that's you can't do this secretly. You can't do a double life if you're going to put out shit at the volume that you want to.
Yeah, I would sum up my take on observing is, and I get this with writing all the time. How do I find the time? How do I find the time? It's you say at a time, this is when you do X. You have to, if you don't respect that time, it becomes very flexible or whatever, then other people won't. But if they know you're in recording, if they know you're in your computer and you're going and doing this sort of thing and you're consistent about it, it becomes, it's base psychology. You realize that is a real thing. If you don't treat it as a real thing, the people around you won't. But it's why I'm a bachelor.
No, yeah. When Brian and I first started doing BB Live Show, and Andrew knew my, you know, the girl I was dating at the time. She was somebody that, you know, now she's married, but I assume that she found somebody that was there. She was somebody that wanted to spend a lot of time with somebody that she was dating, which, like, it's not an unreasonable thing. But there was, you know, there probably the one conversation, and this was when I was just kind of getting into, like, high volume internet creation, and we were doing, I mean, at the height, I mean, geez, Andrew, what, we were doing like 7 podcasts a week when we were doing the mini ones. Justin,
you were doing 7 podcasts a week.
The operation was, and so I made my own schedule, and we had a conversation that was, well, if you can make your own schedule, then why don't you make your schedule like my schedule so we can have more time together? And I was just like, about that. I think this is gonna, this isn't gonna work. And, at the end of it, you know, that was pretty much when I started calling in a lot more into, BB Live Show. And that was really the beginning, you know, in earnest of this kind of whole journey that I'm on now. And the joke was that I had broke up with my girlfriend to marry the internet. And, you know, as it turned out, it's a pretty fruitful marriage.
Well, and, keep in mind too, that, you know, that's one take, is to just break up with your family to marry the internet.
Sure.
Another thing.
That's the only take, Brian.
Another angle might be, you know, think creatively. Think total blue sky. Think, what are the vectors we have? What am I comfortable moving on? What am I not comfortable moving on? And for example, you know, right now, as we record this, this is exactly the kind of situation that 5 years ago I'd be screwed. There's no way I could record at 3:30 in the afternoon because Calliope is at home. Bonnie has to go pick up Penelope, and we're waiting on Josie to come home. There's nobody to watch the 4-year-old, and we have tried in the past this loose, like, keep the door open, and we've had some unexpected visits from Calliope, and we've been able to roll with it. But that's not a long-term solution that we could deal with. So now, you know, Bonnie knows, like, well, it's not reasonable for us to move weird things because we finally have it at a time that opens up Sundays for the family, and she really likes that. So we've got a babysitter. I have hired a babysitter right now who's taking care of Callie outside so that we could do this content creation. And that is something that flat out would not have occurred to me in the early days of starting all this. It would have been like, well, that's just silly. I'm not made of money. This is supposed to be, I'm trying to grow a thing here and I can't spend money to do it. Maybe not, but maybe you could partner with some, maybe you could trade guitar lessons with somebody, in exchange for them watching the kids or opening up. I mean, just blank slate, tabula rasa, look at the pieces and you can figure out solutions you would never expect to find.
And 100%, 1,000%. I had in my image, like, out the babysitter outside. I'm imagining, like, this mongrel German shepherd standing there, you know, staring at Callie. You
know, I'm like, I got a baby. Don't worry about it.
So, you know, that's one of the things. It's a very good suggestion. It's like, you think we get in this problem where we think too linear about solutions. You know, you mentioned, like, the babysitting problem. You're like, babysitter's too expensive. Like, okay. Let's say that you wanted to write and you started a local writers group with people of like 4 or 5 other parents, people who have kids, and you say, hey, here's the deal. I'll watch your kids for, you know, 3 hours a week. I'll take care of the kids on a play day while you go write. And then we rotate and we go through that. You look at how do other people solve these problems. You know, it's like I talk to people who are like, I have friends that, you know, want to move in LA or whatever like that. And it's like, oh man, like, you know, apartments are expensive. It's like, yeah, it's like, well, if I was 22 and I wanted to move out here, I'd get a roommate, you know? And some people are like, don't even think about that. But other people automatically, oh, I'll get it. They're like, oh, I'm going to get an apartment with two rooms. So that way, if I need to, I can rent out the other room kind of thing. People, you have to think in a different sort of way. And that's how you solve these problems.
I mean, totally. The good news is though, for him, is that we're in a different era in 2017 than we were back in, you know, 2007, you know, 2005.
Oh, yeah, no, there was zero. And we even talked about that over lunch, like YouTube, when he had his first big hit, it was a tutorial on Let It Go. And it was straight up because he went to go. His kid was really into it, and he went to find a tutorial, found out there wasn't one, and he was like, well, hello, what have we here? And then made it, and it hit a 500,000, and then he eventually thought, like, oh, duh, what if I enabled monetization on this, and so on. Like, look at this. It's up to 750,000 views on there right now, and it took him a while to think to turn a bunch of stuff on.
That's wonderful. So speaking of the day and age in which we live in, I get different projects I start on. And last year, I've talked about this before. I decided to learn to code because I always had ideas for projects to code. And I kept driving everybody else nuts trying to pull them into my projects and stuff. And I kept thinking, okay, what's the limiting factor? Not knowing how to code. And I would say, what's the biggest problem? Like, I don't know somebody to do this, or I don't know how much I want to pay to do it. I'm like, well, what's the other solution? I'd be like, well, I could learn to code. Be like, oh, no, that's too hard. And then, you know, I thought, like, well, there are people who can code. So it's a thing that people can do. I'm a person, which is kind of like being people. maybe this person could learn to code. And then there's like, it's like, well, I can come up with every excuse in the world to not do it. For years, I mean, I did super, super simple stuff back in the day, you know, little script monkeying or whatever, but not real. Oh, this is how I'd build this thing from the ground up. And that's when I decided to jump in and do it. And, you know, you get over, and then I had to just get over the idea of like, I'm learning. I'm going to start here. And there will be people who look at what I do and be like, why did you do that? Why did you do that? And it's like, well, I got to start somewhere, you know, and if I let that be the limiting factor, I'd never do it. So there's me before I learned to do this, and there's me after I started doing this. And I like me better now because now I have this really cool skill that I get ideas for projects and pursue them. And I built Author Page was the very first project I did. Since then, I've learned a lot more other stuff. And I find myself, I was describing something, somebody like, oh, what'd you do Friday? And I described what I did. I'm like, oh my God, if I could go back in time, because it was a year ago next month that I decided to do it, because it was on my birthday. It was a year ago. So it was 11 months ago that I decided. If I could go back in time and tell myself a year ago, hey, yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah, I'll spend a Friday afternoon diggling into the Google Vision API, trying to figure out how to take random images that I upload to it, search to the Amazon's ASIN product index, find matching images and web pages, pull out the product data and all this, and then spit it back out into, you know, a form. I'd be like, that's cool. What does that mean? You know, but, you know, now having dug into a little bit of coding, I'm like, oh, it's like, I was playing around with the system where I would upload an image to a server. I would use Google's Vision, its AI for recognizing objects. It would recognize what's in there. And if it was a picture of a book or whatever, it would try to identify what that book was, which is not as easier said than done, because it's not like if the book's a different angle or whatever, or if it's never been indexed with the text for it. So Google has a system for doing that. Amazon has their own version, whatever. And then, you know, I found out, like, man, like, yeah, I just took this really complicated API, not a complicated if you know what you're doing, but to me a year ago was impossible. Took it from one API, put it in another API, and I spit out this other thing. And I'm like, well, if I can do this, anybody could do this, is my point. And I guess what I want to get at is, man, like, if you want to code, or if you ever have projects that you want to do, learn. Like, I was speaking at a class last week, and there was a girl I was talking to there. She said, yeah, I have this idea for an app, and I'm looking for a technical founder, co-founder. I'm like, why don't you be that? You know, she's like, well, I don't know how to code. I'm like, well, what you described to me is pretty simple. And if the difference between you getting this done and not getting this done is somebody who needs to know how to code, then maybe you should just be the person who knows how to code.
Yeah, or even if you do it badly. And by the way, anytime somebody says, well, I don't know how to blank, I always, you know, asterisk yet, because you're not locked into anything, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, there's one thing, if it's like, no, it's just a one-off thing you want to do. Yeah, that's different. But I realized any project you're going to want to do like that, you can, I could hire somebody like, yes, then you got to have somebody supervise the code. You've got to have somebody follow through on the code on where it's going through. And that's the thing I realized, like, yeah, like some people can put stuff quick together, but like, and if you don't scale and make money from what you're doing, it's going to die. But if you learn the skills, you know, and that's now, I wish I did it 10 years ago, but the tools I'm using didn't exist. The tool I'm using for the vision thing didn't exist, you know, 8 months ago,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So I'm just telling you,
even if you are to hire somebody, you should probably, like, you are wasting money if you don't know how to talk to them. And you don't know exactly what you want, and you don't know where you're going. You know, that's and especially in engineering, that is something where you really, 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 really owe it to yourself, and even more so if you're putting money into it, to just have a sense of it and know where you would want to go and how it would to be done.
Well, and that's just it. You don't want to be that rube that, you know, somebody just, you know, rolls his shoulders and be like, well, you're talking about 35 different power couplings and that kind of code. I'm afraid I'm going to have to triple charge you for the flip-flop. And, you know, it's like you at least want to be like, that. Those are nonsense words. And you don't even know that if you haven't even, you know, dipped your toes in the water.
Yeah, and I have a very realistic estimate of like, oh, what would it cost to build something? But I also know that there's a wide difference between knowledge and what people know. I mean, you know, most coders are not Dan Dirks. You know, most coders, you know, we've got some exceptional people who've contributed and built some amazing things for what we do in Diamond Club and all that, you know, and then those are some really exceptional people. But you come across other people who you realize, like, you're like, I realize I've had conversations with people who are code. I'm like, I know more now than they did. You know, they were just somebody who, you know, had a limited tool set and just sort of did that, but they found people to sell it to and market to, you know. But
yeah.
Anyhow, long story short, if I can do it, you can do it. And I really sincerely mean that. So
right on. Yeah, you guys want to do some picks?
Let's do some picks.
Did Justin, I might have said this one when Andrew wasn't around. Did I already say the one thing, the book?
You got me.
Okay. Well, if I haven't, I'm just finishing up the one thing. It's available on Amazon. It's by author Gary Keller, and it's really, really great. Good clarifying exercise. I'm almost certain that I've said it before. So I'll give an alternate pick. Alternate pick is Rick and Morty Virtual Rickality, which is a short little 6-hour VR adventure. If you enjoy Rick and Morty, you're going to enjoy the tedious assembly of pipes by their bar color code according to instructions with alien scribbles all around them.
Back up on the one thing, Brian. I don't know this. Did you? Because I think
you know what? Yeah, this all might have been while you were out of the mix. I had talked about the podcast minimum and the clarifying exercise mm-hmm. of having a someday goal. The podcast that he was summarizing was the author Gary Keller, who is the author of The One Thing. And so a lot of what I enjoyed in there is in there. Basically, it's you got a lot of things to do, but one of them is demonstrably, factually better than the others. By which I mean it will make all the other things easier if accomplished. And possibly make the other things irrelevant. And if once you identify that one thing, you know, he's breaking down an 8-hour workday, in which case you block out 4 hours for that one thing with zero distractions. If you can, you know, figure out, make it clear to everyone else in your office that this is off time and you're only working on your one thing, and everything else, you will figure out a way to make it shrink into the other 4 hours. And meanwhile, you will accomplish the single most important thing to set you on a 5, 10, 15, 20 year career path to get you in a place where you've accomplished so much more.
Cool. Very, very cool. Justin.
Oh man, you go. I think I just lost my train of thought here.
So I'll do two picks. One is just it was the audiobook I listen to. I listen to audio. I think I may have mentioned this before, but Behind the Cloud, which is just kind of a very interesting story about a company that we all interact with in probably one way or the other without realizing it, and that's Salesforce.com. And,
oh my goodness, I have not heard about this at all.
Salesforce.com?
No. This book. Yeah, you said you'd mentioned it, but it must have been when I was out.
Yeah, I think it was.
No, I may have just in passing. It's a quick thing. So Salesforce.com, basically, it started off with a very, very bold idea back in the early 2000s, late 1990s, which was Mark Benioff, who had worked with Oracle, whatever, was looking at that time, if you were a company and you wanted to use computing systems, you would buy a bunch of servers and computers. They would come install software for you, and then you would have, that's how you would do it. This was the way things were done. And then you would go pay, buy your software to go do it. Benioff had struck on this, and other people were kind of getting around this idea of like, well, what if we host after things that are possible once another thing is possible? Once you have the cell phone and once you have the, portable computers in your phone, Instagram is possible. Once you had the internet and you had servers and you had companies selling server space, you had all this sort of stuff, Benioff was like, well, contact management software, managing all my sales contacts, managing how I do sales, all which is everything from the people who call you up to try to sell you something over the phone you don't want, mm-hmm. to car dealerships, to salesmen, pharmacists. I mean, it covers a wide gamut of the spectrum of commerce. Benioff's idea was like, what if companies could do this? They could, instead of buying the software or buying the hardware, they bought a subscription, a monthly subscription or a yearly subscription, and we used our servers and we just served it. And so it was the idea of software as a service, which is now an obvious sort of thing. Many of the things that we do, so many things I do and interact with, like I was talking about coding before, I use a thing called Cloud9 to do my coding online, which is software as a service. I pay them like $20 a month. For my servers, I use Heroku, which is I pay another $30 whatever a month for them to go do that. My storage is Amazon, and now I'm using Google Storage. I pay for this other service system. So I'm using four or five different services, and that's the standard way they did it. But when Benioff started this system, when he started Salesforce.com, the idea of like, oh, if you need to do this thing to manage, do these people, just do it through a browser, use it, just that's all you need. People are like, nah. He had trouble getting investors. What is now the wave, is the way everything is done. And, it's kind of an interesting sort of, one of just how people are so set in looking at how things are done one way, they can't see the different way of which it will work. And then now couldn't even imagine an economy without this. One of Amazon's biggest revenue generators is their software as a services are providing platforms for providers to do that. Most people think of it as books, whatever. So it's an interesting overview of the formation of that. And I'll give you my quick little example of, I think there's a study that came out that talked about the problem with electric cars. It would say that you would need as many gas stations as there are, to charge cars. And that's the problem, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, that's the wrong thinking. What is a gas station? A gas station is a pump that sits on top of a big, huge tank filled with gas that then has to have people driving trucks back and forth and delivering to it. What is an electric charging station? It's a box connected to the grid.
Yeah.
And a high capacity, grid. I could put one in 7-Eleven. I could put one everywhere. I could put I think we're going to see a trend in the next 5 to 10 years with electric cars become more prevalent. You're going to have big startups are going to be ones that are going to be selling charging, but installing charging stations in just about everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's changed the paradigm.
Make them as ubiquitous as like ATMs, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great example, Brian. And I think that's what it's going to be like, is that 7-Eleven is going to make a deal. Some company says, yeah, we're going to put charging stations in front of all the 7-Elevens, and maybe you book it in advance, whatever. There's going to be a system, but that's going to be a totally different, and it'll be a bubble, I'm sure, but because it's like, that's going to be a big thing. There's hardly any electric cars on the road. We're a few months away from Tesla theoretically shipping the Model 3, GM's shipping their cars and whatever quantities they're doing. They say they're not, a compliance car, but feels like it to me. But anyhow, in a few years, they're going to be everywhere and you're going to want to charge them. But we don't need to go to gas stations. We don't need to do that. You just put those little charging docks in front of Starbucks, wherever. So,
right on.
That's my point. Salesforce it was a great overview of watching this company that fought so much resistance of like, nah, is this really the future? Is this it? Now it's like, well, of course. But everybody else was against it. I mean, he couldn't get regular venture capital funding.
That's
amazing.
Now
it's, $50 billion company.
They're going to own a part of the skyline. They're building one of the biggest buildings in San Francisco right now.
Wow.
You know, like, and that is transformative wealth.
Yeah. So I just thinking differently is great. So unless you have a pick, I'm going to just.
Yeah, no, I got a pick. I got a, I am doing a little book club on the Politics podcast. I love campaigns, and unfortunately, the presidential campaign had to come to an end. However, we are in summer after a campaign year, which means all the books about the campaign year come out now. So if you are into reading and you are done with the One Thing and the Salesforce book, then go ahead and check out Shattered. This is the book that we are reading right now on Politics. We're going to do a special episode as kind of a big sort of book report on it when I'm done reading it. It is the inside look into the Hillary Clinton campaign. And so far, it is pretty good. I have to say that I always like all these kinds of books, this genre of book. And there is a lot of really, it's delivering on all the vectors that I like in these books, like a little bit of tidbits of information that you didn't know before, how everybody thought about decisions before they were made, little gossip on the temperament of everybody behind the curtain. Great. Shattered. Pick it up.
Awesome.
Gentlemen, feels good to be home.
Yeah, dude.
It's been after.
Yeah.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.